This episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, like every episode of Watch Out for Fireballs, is brought to you by our patrons, specifically patrons such as Chris Hertline, Phil R., and Bethany. Thank you very much. If you would like to support us, if you'd like to be thanked, if you'd like to get a bunch of bonus shows, and would like to keep this concern a-rolling on, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we're talking about Unavowed, which is a point-and-click adventure game developed and published by Wadget Eye Games for PC in 2018.
Yeah. This episode, very sweetly, executive produced for Andrew as a gift from their husband.
Yeah.
Ed. Big shout out to Ed.
Thank you so much, Ed, and
thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
Merry Christmas. I think this was a Christmas gift of our call.
Oh, sweet, cool. And that's actually a pretty good turnaround on those. So, sweet.
Allow me to be the first to wish you Merry Christmas 2024.
I like how I went like, oh, we're not too late, and you went, oh, yeah, we're extremely
we're very
early.
Yeah, that's just my humor. Yeah. In this game, you play as a member of the Unavowed, which is an ancient organization that protects New York City, and there are various cells across the world, from supernatural threats.
Yes. Specifically, you are trying to hunt down and stop a malevolent being who possessed you for a year and made you commit a bunch of horrendous acts, things like killing people and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
It basically is a point-and-click adventure game, a very light point-and-click adventure game.
Yes.
Mixed with a couple vague RPG mechanics to this effect. It has an RPG tag.
Mm-hmm.
In some places that's inaccurate.
Yes.
This is not that. Mm-hmm. It is a very, very light point-and-click adventure with some kind of designs and innovations in that space.
Yeah. Specifically, this is pulling some of the party interaction stuff from mid-era BioWare kind of things.
Very light, light version of it. Like, you choose who you take and they talk to each other,
mm-hmm.
but they don't have quests. You just kind of, fill out their...
Yeah,
you bring their backstory.
You bring them along. They have conversations with each other, depending on the pairing. When you're out, there's very much a Mass Effect 2 kind of structure to this. Not just in doing these chapters to recruit people, but also reporting back to the base and doing a little debrief with everybody.
Literally going up to everyone and being like, "What do you think of that?"
Yeah. And, this ends up being a point and click version of a cinematic adventure game kind of thing, almost. Think a Life is Strange or Telltale kind of deal.
Yeah. 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 It's, so you do have inventory. So very, very limited inventory. You can inspect and interact with certain things in the environment. The main thing is you can use your party members as puzzle elements.
Mm-hmm.
But there's very little to this, kind of in general, mechanically.
Yes.
The puzzles are not complicated. Mm-hmm. The conversation has a lot of weight, but the conversations are not puzzles.
Right.
I'm not saying that they don't have value because of that. Mm-hmm. I'm saying that they're not dialogue
puzzles.
They're not things you have to do in dialogue from a gameplay perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And using your companions, their abilities, to create these kind of different paths to resolve the conflicts, you can do every party member can solve every puzzle.
Yeah.
So it's really just choosing kind of the avenue of approach.
Right.
For them.
So like the two people who are in the organization with you when you start, to kind of give an example, and we'll talk about the others as they come along. But you have a guy named Eli, who is a fire mage, and he can use his magic to heat things up, light things on fire, attack people, things like that. And you also have Mandana, this half djinn, who is really strong with a sword and can also like sense when people are lying.
Yes. And can climb things.
Yes.
I like how you had to bring her in to do like climb up a gym rope, because that's very realistic. This creates kind of a light maniac mansioning,
mm-hmm.
you know, except with a couple exceptions. You're never locked out of a content.
Yeah.
You know, you may not get a specific dialogue thing, but you can do every puzzle in the game with every single person. So right. Imagine if like Bernard had different ways to, you know, get lift weights.
Right.
And stuff like he'd invented a machine. That'll make sense to people who are very deep in maniac mansion.
Yep.
Yeah. And only that.
But, and only that. Yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You also have a little bit of a character creation, like a BioWare character creation, where you choose a background,
mm-hmm.
a gender, and then a background between actor, bartender, and cop, the three genders.
Mm-hmm.
And this creates some additional puzzle solutions. Largely, though, this will be like New Vegas style, I have this background tag.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get past this dialogue wall in one of three ways, and it's just the flavor you get past it.
Right.
You know, it's worth, I'm being very cagey about describing what things are puzzles in this game,
mm-hmm.
because like I generally like this game, mm-hmm. you know, like getting out of the way. I didn't love it, but I generally, you know, had a fine enough time with it.
It's a pretty firm B, you know.
It's one of the lightest things we've ever done in terms of mechanics generally.
Mm-hmm.
There's not very many puzzle moments or points of like intuition or anything like that. Mm-hmm. The actual puzzles are like, there's a key and there's a lock in the same room. Like if you use the things that are in the zone together, mm-hmm. they happen, or you just complete dialogue.
It
feels a lot like watching a movie.
Yeah. You know, like if you put like at one extreme end of this kind of, you know, graphical RPG or graphical adventure game, rather, you've got like Thimbleweed Park. Right.
Yes.
Which is like Monkey Island 2, in that you'll pick up something and need to use it, you know, all the way across the map at a different time and a different, you know, kind of kind of place.
In a non-intuitive way.
Yeah. Here, each of these chapters is probably like 5 or 6 screens, maybe.
Yes.
Very
at most.
Yeah.
Like it's instanced almost.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
And nothing that you pick up in one chapter carries over to like the next one. So like the possibility space, just like, you know, if you look at this as a problem that could be like brute forced, there are just so few things to interact with and so few items to rub against other things.
You almost can't not brute force it.
Yeah.
Even just like the first thing you try is likely to be identical to a brute force solution,
right.
because there are very few elements, like moving mm-hmm. elements to
there's
it.
nothing in the way of inventory chaff in this,
yep.
or like red herrings or anything. Everything will have a use pretty close to where you pick it up.
Yeah. And then it's like a small numbers adventure game, like it's you know, 4 or 5 locations, but then also within that there are like 3 or 4 objects,
mm-hmm.
you know, or interactable things kind of almost generally.
No.
This coupled with every party member being able to approach every puzzle.
Yeah.
So if a puzzle's in a level, there are some that are inventory that anyone can do. There's some that require a specific party member, but the game will move forward regardless. So whether Eli, the fire mage, threatens somebody with magic or Mandana threatens somebody with a sword, that's mm-hmm. just like an example I'm, you know, pulling out of nowhere. That's not specifically from the game.
Right.
They both just get you through the thing.
Yeah.
You just
yeah.
click on your companion and then click on the operative object.
Yeah.
It's worth noting, like, it's just something I'm thinking about in terms of like, you know, we got to keep, I would like, you know, in the show to keep our powder dry on these games that don't have mechanic stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just worth noting, like, before going into it, like, this is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's kind of a greased rail
yes.
down through these pretty interesting chapters in this, you know, neat world with some cool ideas happening.
Yeah,
to
you
it,
get you
right?
get told you get told a reasonable story.
Yeah,
you know, it is kind of what you're signing up for with Unavowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is down to, like, there's not, like, a verb selection or anything. I like that you, like, examine things just by mousing over and getting basically a tooltip.
That's really smart.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, it's just, oh, if it's clickable, you do the thing that you can do with that.
Yeah. Which and there's a button to just make all the objects, you know, in the room that you interface with show up.
Yeah. And then also you have like it, they do like a Sam and Max thing with this where your party members are like the way that you direct them to do something is to drag them out of your inventory.
Yes.
And then you use them on the thing. That's about as, you know, intricate as it gets.
Yeah. There are a couple of moments of intuition that happen in this. Like it's not absolutely bereft of it. It's just pretty low on it, you know? So it has that movie feel.
Yeah. This is coming from us, people who have experience with a bunch of these. Somebody who has no experience with point and click adventure games will not necessarily feel these deficiencies.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Like it's hard to tell. Like, I don't know. This to me felt unusually light.
Yeah.
On that stuff. The point of comparison we have with this, like we'll talk about this later, is Strangeland, which is another game by the same developer.
Yeah.
That had a lot more rigor to it.
Yes.
It wasn't like extremely rigorous, but I could feel a very stark difference between the gameplay modes of that and this. And I think making one size fits all for the party on top of that instant zone thing did some limitations in what kind of things they could design in terms of, you know, brain teasers.
Yes. Yeah. The game is designed so that failure is impossible. You know, if you mess up so badly that you die, you know, you just get a flash to white and then you are right back to where you were before the mistake, which is fine. Yeah.
Yeah. It has such a short memory that, like, again, you're also going to have everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it only has to loop back a screen.
Yes.
Yeah. So kind of aesthetically and tone wise, this is where, you know, the game does its selling point.
Yes.
To it. It's a nice looking game. Some of the backgrounds are just great. Like absolutely great. Everyone stands in a weird way because Adventure Game Studio. but if you're just looking at backgrounds and models, everything's pretty great looking.
Yeah.
Really good pixel art.
Yeah. Love the character portraits that pop up when people are talking. Yeah. The different expressions and stuff they have. It's good. You know, these are, you know, very distinct characters, whether they are mundane or whether they are, you know, cool little supernatural beasties. Right.
Yeah.
Music serves this purpose. This is a very atmospheric game. It is always pouring rain.
Rains the whole week. The biggest kind of watchword for this is the tone, and I'm gonna say something that's gonna make no sense to you and also maybe to, you know, a good portion of our audience, but is, I promise, is very true, at least to my feelings. This is 100% like a unfinished 2007 J. Michael Straczynski comic that went like seven issues, parentheses, non-derogatory, that wants to be a 2007 Peter Milligan comic that went for seven issues, parentheses, slightly derogatory.
Okay.
I will not be elaborating further, but that is 100% accurate.
What I need to know. Make that accessible because we can't just be talking to three people. What comics?
Those three people tell three people? I just mean, so this idea, the secret society.
Of
people, there is a hidden world under New York that all the supernatural things are true. Here are a variety of very superhero archetypical almost crew that shows up for the Monster Squad. It has to me a very mid-2000s feeling.
I catch that vibe. I just don't know what J. Michael Straczynski or Michael Higgins.
Peter Milligan.
Peter Milligan's.
So it's just, it's kind of, it has his tone to it more and is not.
Hey, Gary, what fucking comics did they write? Hey, Gary?
J. Michael Straczynski, he's the Babylon 5 guy, but he also wrote like Rising Stars.
Okay.
And like a bunch of weird bad Spider-Man arcs.
Okay.
That had like a hidden world kind of thing to it.
Okay. Sorry.
Again, I was saying for those who know, I want the three people who understand it to tell other people. It's called A Lost Leader.
I literally, because I've heard you said that on Blue Sky, and you've said it to me. You've said it to me in person. I just want to know what actual comics this is like.
Is a Bakugan?
They walk left. They walk right. Apparently, Straczynski wrote a comic called Dream Police, which is good.
That's the kind of thing he would do. Stuff like this.
Yeah.
Backwards engineer it. But when I say it's mildly derogatory, wants to be a Peter Milligan 2007 comic that went for seven issues, it doesn't, like, to me, this game does not have like sparky dialogue to it, and it's not quite trippy enough. Like, there are a couple trippy things that happen in it, but it has a very like dabbling in Vertigo comics vibe to it. This is maybe one of these things where my background gave me tons of inoculation to this.
Yeah. There's stuff in this that I had not, that I had inoculation to. Like, the twist in this is basically straight up pulled from a very famous Japanese adventure game that a lot of people have played, you know?
Yeah. It is a twist that is also huge in that era of like Vertigo comics, right, or kind of edgy comics. You know, and again, so only slightly derogatory.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not these people's fault. And we talk about development, like, originally that was going to be a more direct bit. I'm kind of glad that it wasn't, because this has none of the bite of any of those things.
Yeah. Yeah.
To it. Like, it's got, there is a tameness to this overall.
Yeah.
And kind of goofy tone, and a lack of having my mind blown. By these things. Like, there's no point in this where a twist or a concept where I'm like, holy shit, I've never seen that before. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's good.
Everything just kind of tracks based on once you figure out what players are in play, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah, that's probably roughly how that's going to go.
Well, and like, once you do the genre, like urban fantasy, mid-2000s urban fantasy, these are all just kind of things from it. It feels like a little bit.
Yeah.
Like the individual details might be slightly different, but when they're different, they feel a little Mad Libsy. Like, oh, it's a merman. I don't know.
No.
Why not? Why not a merman who's a psychic? Like, we get that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So it's a little like just a very gentle tour of the urban fantasy genre, you know, kind of.
Yes.
Deal. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lack of kind of spark and bite to some of the dialogue and concepts that makes it feel a little toothlessy to me. If that makes sense. Whereas some of the individual things that are happening are cool.
Yeah.
The plot beats are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think the plot itself is pretty fun and good, a good structure for something that I wish I enjoyed reading a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, just in terms of like having some viv to the writing.
Yeah. I have affection for these characters. I think these characters are good, you know?
Yeah. They're good. I agree. I'm with you. That sounded like I was going to caveat you. They agree.
No,
I think that the cop is a little bit over the top. she's very, very, they're very broad characters. We're dealing with some real archetypes going on.
Yeah. Here. Talking about the development, pulled some of these details. There's an article by Marshall Honoroff on Tom's Guide, and then also an interview with the developer here on Niche Gamer. We've played a game that was published by Watch It Eye before, Strangeland, a couple years ago, during a Halloween month. But this is the first game that we played that was actually developed by them.
Yes. This is a big player right now in the classic adventure game world. They went back to 2006. The designer, Dave Gilbert, released an adventure game called The Shiva. Has a really good reputation for an adventure game studio contest.
Yes. That's interesting. I've wanted to play that for a while. It's like a murder mystery where you play as a rabbi. Looks real cool. I'm surprised I haven't checked it out yet. But then they kind of moved on. They did that, kind of made their bones there, and then developed like five of these Blackwell games, these kind of supernatural mystery, like ghost story, hard-boiled detective kind of things. The series, before starting to publish these adventure games made by some others, you know, things like Strangeland, Techno Babylon, Gemini Rue, you know, a bunch of stuff like that.
This game is in the Blackwell extended universe as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So Unavowed specifically, developed by David Gilbert, is very much a Watch It Eye game, which it also means like an adventure game studio game, if you know that. Super detailed pixel art, really traditional point and click gameplay design, and not a whole lot of puzzles. Much more of a narrative focus.
Right.
When I talk about this originally, you know, going to the well for dark fantasy in the mid 2010s, Dave Gilbert was in talks with Vertigo Comics to make a pixel art adventure game. They offered him Sandman or Hellraiser. He chose Hellraiser, you know, because it wasn't the product of a single writer like Sandman. He wasn't going to be compared to Neil Gaiman.
Yes.
And that didn't go anywhere. That didn't work.
No.
Yeah.
Based on the interview that I read, it got to the phase of like, oh, hey, you know, we're maybe looking at having you make one of these. They did some like graphic mock-ups, and that's about as far as it got. But this gave Gilbert the bug to make this game in an urban fantasy setting, right? Like, let's file off some of the serial numbers.
Yeah. So Gilbert was inspired by comments by BioWare writer Jennifer Helper.
Hepler, yes.
To the effect of wanting to see a party-based RPG that didn't rely on combat.
Mm-hmm.
So Hepler was credited as a narrative consultant on the game.
Yeah, Jennifer Hepler, the famously harassed out of the industry for making that comment. So
yeah,
cool.
Yeah. Be careful what you say, I guess. It's a nightmare zone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They attempted to switch things up. Wajidai is synonymous with Adventure Game Studio, because this was going to be more complex. They tried for about 6 weeks to shift over to Unity to make something, but it just was not as effective for them. They're a studio that is made for AGS, so they stuck with that, and they modified it really heavily to support the kind of different stuff that this does, specifically having the number of characters that this has.
They also, this was their core competency.
Yeah.
Was doing things in 2D. Moving to 3D would take a lot of time and money. And mm-hmm. we might end up in a similar thing to, go to the Blasphemous 2 episode.
Yes.
Where they moved to those animated cutscenes after kind of, this was their specialty.
Yeah.
So to speak. The game was received well within Wajidai circles, which means, it's never going to sell tons. It's a classic point-click adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
But it did sell better than anything the studio had done at that point.
Got a good review from the AV Club's William Hughes, whoever that is.
Yes.
Yeah. And Dave Gilbert continuing to crank away, working on a new game called Old Skies, but there's not much detail about that yet.
Yeah. And let's get into it.
Something that is going to be the case here is that everybody's playthrough is going to be a little bit different because of the backgrounds that they pick, and also because of the people they take, right?
Yeah. This was one of the things I was trying to dig at before. This will not be as different as maybe I want it to be.
Yes.
When a lot of times the different characters you bring are just different shaped keys for the same locks.
Mm-hmm.
And your background is also a different shaped key for the same lock.
Yes.
So we chose different backgrounds for this.
Mm-hmm.
But in looking, doing research and watching some other plays of it and stuff, generally what this means is what thing is in parenthetical that allows you to just bypass a dialogue bit.
Right.
Like, you could always do it. If you're a cop, you intimidate. If you're an actor, you lie.
Yeah.
So,
and if you're a bartender, you empathize. Who was your character? What'd you do?
I played the actor,
mm-hmm.
In this. So, the game opens up regardless with your character, on the rooftop. You are being captive on a rooftop. A man is trying to exorcise this demon out of you.
Right.
And you answer his questions, and this establishes your background. So I played, Gary, the human actor.
Hmm. Gotcha. I played, the bartender. I played a female bartender. So,
yeah.
Yep. And then you flash to a different time. Like, I can give like a summary of what happens here for the bartender origin.
Yeah.
You're going to work at this bar and this old customer is standing outside. This formerly mean drunk named Logan, who mm-hmm. got sober, but he is asking for help. He doesn't want to go inside because you don't go in a bar if you're in recovery. His brother is in there and locked in the bathroom, making a scene like he's in real trouble in there. His brother Jonah. And you go in, and Jonah is standing in the bathroom with a gun to his head, talking about how he can't stop hearing the voices, and soon he's going to join this army of the dead. And you can see on the bathroom mirrors, like, somebody is writing "help him" on the mirror there.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we're going to see a lot later on.
The character we're going to meet later.
Yes. Yeah.
The origins have a preview character.
Yeah.
From there, the actor origin has the cut character.
Yep.
weirdly Callie. Enough. So,
yeah. So I talk him into handing over the gun, and he says, like, hey, take this book on demonology and spirits, too. This didn't help me like I thought it would. And then the book opens up, and a ghost flies inside my mouth. And then suddenly my character, out of my control, shoots him and then goes outside and shoots the boss. So, you know, this has turned from a possession into a massacre.
The boss of the bar?
The boss of the bar, yes.
Gotcha. Gotcha. The actor one, you come in and the writer, you come to work. One of the actresses is outside smoking. You know, oh, I thought you quit. And she's like, yeah, the show's tanked. And you go inside and you talk to another one of the actors who's like, yeah, you got to talk to the writer. He's doing rewrites at this late last step. It's nuts. You know, we have the show complete, but we're not going to be able to do it now. You know, you go talk to him. I can't. And you go talk to him and he is sitting there furiously typing at a computer. And Calliope, the muse, we're going to find out later, is sitting there watching him. And you talk to him. You're like, hey, man, what's going on? And he basically can't stop writing. He wants to, but he can't.
Oh, huh.
You know, he's just like, I'm so inspired. We need to do this. We need to do that. You know, the old version was trash. You know, we need to attach this character before we kill them off, things like that.
Yeah.
So you have to stop him from writing. There's, you know, a little mini puzzle where you can't pull the plug on his laptop because he bolted it in, but you can use scissors.
Okay.
And cut it out. You do so. You get this book that he's had his hands on, also a demonology book that ever since he read it, that's when the muse came. You grab that book, and as soon as you pick it up, you walk forward and stab him in the eyes with the scissors. And Calliope's like, I'm gonna leave you to this, and leaves. And then you go out and slit the throat of the guy, the other actor.
Okay. Yeah.
So
it's all killing people at your workplace.
You get a book and you kill your coworkers.
Yes.
And you meet a member. I'm sure you meet the cop in the cop origin.
Yeah. I'm sure you meet Vicky. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you meet Vicky. I could not remember her name. Mm-hmm. Regardless of which origin you choose, then we flash back to the present.
Yes.
You're back on the rooftop.
Yeah. Where the man, Eli, completes his exorcism, drawing the spirit into his staff before lightning hits him. And then the spirit flies away.
Yeah. So Eli's there is, and then Mondi's here, who we're gonna see, and they take you inside and try to explain what's going on. And inside the room, it's been a massacre.
Yeah.
There are bodies lying everywhere. And you find out, that you did this, you've been possessed. It does the, dialogue choice thing where, you get three variations that all lead to the same place.
Right. Yeah.
There's it's pretty rare that your dialogue will result in different things that happen. There's a weird thing where you have three responses to almost everything. They all lead to the next line, almost with no variation.
Right.
So you're kind of role playing a little bit. It's not going to have any reactivity.
Right. This isn't necessarily, it's not branching really.
There's no branches. Yeah. You're watching a movie, but you get to say like, I did this or no way did I do this. And both lead to the same response.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, you've been possessed for a whole year and this is just the most recent of your acts, right?
Yes.
And we have to go flee, you know, and the cops are going to show up here eventually. You know, basically my life as I knew it is over. And we go into this back alley and the exorcism spell has summoned a creature, kind of this skinless humanoid made out of sinew that Eli calls a ligamental, which is a very good name for this creature.
That's a cute name for sure. Yeah. This is, he showed up and he's like, you summoned me here. I didn't do this on purpose. I need to eat. I'm hungry. I need human flesh.
Yeah.
And you have to incapacitate him, through weirdly, the very first thing that you do in the game is the most traditional adventure game puzzle.
Yep.
this feels like it's on purpose, almost as like a joke to me.
Yeah.
Non-derogatory, like a joke from the developer.
Yes.
Like, hey, do you remember The Longest Journey? We did stuff like this and that.
It's really funny. I was like, okay, is this what we're doing? Like straight up Monkey Island stuff. So, the ligamental is arguing with Eli.
It will go on forever as well. They'll just keep going in this weird loop of just like, I'm going to eat you. Well then do it. I'll stop you. All right. And that will just go on for eternity. It's very funny.
While you're standing behind the Ligamental, and you've, you know, it's a single screen adventure game thing. What you have to do is go into a dumpster, grab a cloth, and some wire. It's raining, you know, because it's raining this entire week. You have to reroute this downspout to make a puddle under him, and then use the wire to connect this circuit breaker to the puddle to zap this thing and incapacitate it.
Yeah. Yep. It falls down. You're given the option to either have Mondi kill him or let him feed on the dead bodies inside. Mm-hmm. You're given a series of choices, basically, to spare or kill the architects of the various supernatural threats at the end of each chapter. Mm-hmm. They will come back later.
Yes.
To do something. So I spared this guy. I'll be curious how it's different in the last chapter.
Right.
Oh, he's just hungry. Let him eat the bodies inside. I don't give a shit about them people.
Yeah.
One of your party members will like one thing and the other one will like another.
Yes.
None of them get like mad or anything. They just go, I would have done it this way, but I can see why you did it that way.
Right. Yeah. What's interesting is what's best for the world is not what's best for the last chapter of this.
Yeah.
As well, like you get epilogues depending on the choices that you made. Like some of these people definitely gotta go, but
yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Waste not, want not. And then they say,
I killed him.
Wasted, you want not, waste not.
Mm-hmm.
Want waste. You're given the option, here. They ask you, you know, what to do, and they say, like, listen, your old life is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're wanted by the police, you have to join us in the Unavowed. We're going to put a veil over you. People aren't really going to recognize you. Mm-hmm. Go on the lam.
Yes. The only people who will recognize you are people who are void touched, right? Anybody who has been exposed to these interdimensional forces, right?
Yeah.
So you're at the headquarters. You're at the Doctor Strange lair.
You wake up in your room. There's a weird little, there's a thread I really wish continued.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on your background, a picture appears here. Mine was a picture of like me doing opening night of Hamlet. Back in the day. And I asked somebody about it, one of my teammates, and they're like, oh yeah, this place just has a magical air about it. It's going to bring in things from your old life.
Oh.
And yeah. I kept expecting more things to show up.
It would be great if the lair like kept on evolving, right?
Yeah. It was, and based on what you did in the levels and stuff too.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be cute. But not, you never get another picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Make it kind of like the home bases in, Alpha Protocol, right?
Yeah. 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 Just like, or like, even if not trophies, just it brings in more of your life. That could have been a way to hint at the twist.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Like, this is from my childhood. I don't recognize it. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we get downstairs and we get our, you know, little interstitial conversation stuff, right? You know, we see Mandana emerge from this bottle, kind of establishing that she is half djinn. Right. And we talk a bit. He says, like, hey, my father, Kalash, is going to want to speak to you in the next room. But I go downstairs and talk to Eli here first. He's down in the basement because, you know, basement walls can't catch fire. He's practicing spells.
Yeah. Shooting fire at the wall. And he's long lived. He's a long lived sorcerer.
Yes.
He's been part of the Unavowed since the Nixon administration.
Right.
It looks like Steve Buscemi.
Yep.
Yeah, almost actionably so. So you go and talk to Kalash, who is the djinn, Mandala's father, who is blue.
Mm-hmm.
He leads this branch of the Unavowed. And he is old school. You know, he's the chief.
Yes.
Here. You know, he calls the meeting. He regardless of what you do, he'll chastise you.
Nice.
We are truly in the Mass Effect. When he said this is inspired by Mass Effect, that's how you make every character work for everything.
Uh-huh.
You just make the same thing happen regardless. So I was chastised for letting him meet the people.
Okay. Yeah.
And then he sends you out on a mission.
Yes.
There's something going on in the East Village near a store place.
Yes. So we head there. We take the subway. This is where we can select our party. But right now we just have Eli and Mandana with us. And we get there. And, you know, we come up to street level near this homeless shelter that was burned down. You know, and this is where we talk to a cop and learn about this veil that protects us from being recognized.
Yeah. And we kind of get our superpower. So everybody in the, you know, in the Unavowed gets a superpower.
Mm-hmm.
Ours is, as we're stalking this person, even though the demons left us, as we pass this empty office building, we get a vision of our demon's past.
Right.
You collapse and you see the demon, and we control the demon during these.
Yeah,
usually, yeah. You know, the demon is luring somebody inside, and the people who are with us can see it as well.
Yeah. And this building used to be the office for this, you know, newspaper, the Village Eye, but now it's a squat. Like, you go inside, there are, like, you know, cultist drawings on the walls, things like that. And we see a ghost. And we go into the basement. You know, we see a ghost go down there. But it's too dark for Eli's fire. Like, something down here is pushing, you know, is pushing back.
Yeah. Yep. So we find this photo of a young couple. And then we go to the park. And this is kind of where the, like, you're only doing keys and locks.
Yeah.
There's one person you can, one new person, and you have one thing to do. You know, I know it feels like I'm hammering that too much. I really do like the story of this. It's just worth noting. It's one of those things where that lack of interactivity is for the entire game.
Yes.
And it's, you know, it's fine to be told a story. It's fine to watch a movie. It's just, I think it's important for people to know that's what you're getting into.
Yes.
I guess with this. Yeah. This may be more podcast as service than some things because we are just going to lay out the plot. Of the thing. I don't know what the difference necessarily would have been between me playing this and watching it. And I don't necessarily know what the difference would be between somebody listening to it and playing it.
Yeah.
While still maintaining, I thought it was a pretty good movie. You know, so you take the one thing and you go and take it to the one thing.
Yeah.
You take this photo to this woman in the park. This is Wendy. She calls you master and she hates you. She's recognized you.
Yeah. Like, oh, you abandoned us. Basically what it comes down to, you know, I, our character was their leader until we just up and left one day. And her boyfriend Jordan, was my protege. Right. We left him in charge and she just doesn't want to talk to us anymore. Like, things went really bad once we left.
Yeah. So you use a fuse to restore power in the basement. And when you look down there, you can see it's overgrown with foliage. There's like a weird nature portal. And this unidentifiable body covered with moss on the ground with a ghost hovering over it. And this is where you learn a lot about the cosmology of ghost. Basically, if you're void touched, you can see them, but you can't do anything with them.
Yeah.
Like, they can see you as well, but they are hazy shapes. You can't recognize them.
Yeah.
And they mention the people, like spirit callers or what have you. The people who can do that, but they haven't had one and they're frowned upon by Kalish.
You know, death is, life and death are earthly things, basically, is what it is. A bestower is what those people are called, like the medium people. We're going to get one. Basically, like, ghosts are just another lock that he is a key for that will give us information, right? But when you try to talk to a ghost without that person, all you get is...
The computer's on though now, so you can use that computer in the office. This is where Jordan slept, and there's a slip of password with his heart on it. It says password equals heart sign, so we know that Wendy was his girlfriend, so you click Wendy and that'll get you in.
And there's a journal here, documents kind of the process of what happened here, saying like, hey, this master took him and a bunch of unhoused people in, you know, here into the squat and, you know, kind of formed this community, and cured their illnesses by taking them down to this altar, this nature altar in the basement, and using a magical knife to bleed them. When they, and when one person bled, everybody else got better.
But then he took off and he put Jordan in. He's like, I don't know. You take the dagger. It's very, very Lyle Landley putting Homer in charge. And the healing stopped working. For this after he left. So we go talk to Wendy and be like, hey, you know, we found this information out. And she says that Jordan left her in charge when he left eventually. You know, and she ended up accidentally killing a guy in a ritual. So that's a guy in the basement. She just kept cutting and the healing wouldn't happen. She got mad, threw the knife down in the sewers. And they hit a key down there as well.
This happens so much where just a screen that you could get to before, you have to learn from somebody that there's just a key hidden behind a rock somewhere in order to get it. You get this information and you go down there. It's weird because, like, you go into the sewers and there's this huge cistern that's just kind of boiling. Like, why, you know, why is that the case? You use the key and, you know, mess around with the pipes and drain it, and who emerges from the cistern but Jordan himself, having gone full Ignis.
He's a living fire elemental. You know, he's always on fire. He's Cody from Venture Brothers. You know, he used the spell to let warmth into his heart, and that burned him and burned down the homeless shelter. You know, and we're like, he says he'll get the knife for us from down there if we help him out first.
So we have to talk our way into the homeless shelter. And we open up this locker that has been frozen shut, and we see that Jordan's physical body is inside there, basically frozen into a block of ice. Eli will thaw it out, and we can, you know, take a look at it. Basically, like the spell, oh, it let warmth into his heart, but it's, you know, ironic genie rules. It separated his spirit from his body, and yes, made his spirit into a fire elemental.
Yep. And killed his body. So we go back, yes, and we can tell him he's dead. Mm-hmm. He doesn't know. And you can basically at this point have him put out of his misery or send him across the void to a big fire elemental party as a kind of life there. And Eli is like, no, I wouldn't want to live if I wasn't human. And Mandana's like, no, he should have a chance. Again, you're going to get kind of criticized regardless of what you do. Mm-hmm. And the other person's going to be like, well, I wouldn't have done it that way, but I guess you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
People defer to your judgment to this as a former serial killer demon possessee to an insane degree.
Yeah. It's really just like, how are we going to give you agency on this one? We're not going to micromanage you on that.
No, let's let the new kid figure it out. It's important that he work it out. You know, new members of the Unavowed don't need rules or discipline. So I save him.
Yeah. Yeah. Like he burned down the shelter, but also it wasn't his fault really. Yeah. Like he didn't know that was going to happen, and you know, it deserves a kind of life. Yeah.
Well, yeah. And what kind of life is that? Like, I was just like, really, what's this fire elemental party like? And he comes back later and he's like, yeah, I don't really know the language, but it's kind of neat. it's cute.
Yeah. Wow. So both of us saved him. There we go.
Yep.
We return, you know, we go back and we do our little debrief here, you know, and we walk in on Kalash kind of talking through this crystal, to a dragon spirit, making an appeal for more agents, and he's denied. You know, he calls our meeting here. Basically like the Unavowed is down to the skeleton crew because there hasn't been much going on. But things have gotten just wild.
It's gotten
by
possession. Worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very similar to the Night's Watch in Game of Thrones. Yeah, like it's, you know, nobody it's underutilized, understaffed. Yeah. And every branch has to do their own recruiting. Mm-hmm. And Kalash is a conservative old fuddy duddy who has not wanted to do any recruiting. Right. So he needs this new fresh face to come do it for him, mm-hmm, which is us. Yeah. He calls the meeting. Eli has been analyzing the energy signature on the knife. Mm-hmm. There's nothing Eli can't do.
Yep.
It's very funny how they keep adding verbs to shoot fireballs to make him more useful and more puzzles. Uh-huh. It's very good. So he's reading the energy signature on the knife so he can locate where your demon was when he was in the body. We can kind of follow his path. Mm-hmm. There are two main locations now, the Bronx or Staten Island, mm-hmm, and you can choose them in any order.
Right. I went to the Bronx first. This will.
It was higher in the... the list.
Yeah, it was first. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Yeah, I'm in alphabetical order as well.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna get a character in each of these, and gives you a different options than the other ones. But see above about how much difference that makes. So we head up to the Bronx, and we can, you know, come up to street level by this grocery store and get a vision of our demon self talking to this young woman about this place called the Eddings House.
Yes. Is this the first one where you can control the demon? During these, you do the demon's dialogue during some of these flashbacks.
Yeah, you do the demon's dialogue, I think, at least in this one. And I always choose the, you know, the most indirect but deliciously evil version of it, you know?
Yeah, the writing in these is fun. Yeah. Like some spark comes through in the writing in those. They are deliciously evil,
mm-hmm,
you know? So you find that house, and you go into the backyard, and we see a spirit writing on the windows. Says, break it, mm-hmm, you know, we have to do this. Yeah. Only Mandana is strong enough to throw a brick to a second story window.
It's so funny. I was just like, hey, what's going on? I pick up the brick.
I tried it like a bunch of times and it just really, and my guy was an actor. So it made, I was like, okay, like, but yeah, no.
Yeah, so you have to direct Mandana to do it. If you have Vicky here, she can just use her gun.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's Vicky's move. Uh-huh. And it never solved a puzzle for me.
Okay.
It was very funny. I would click on her and click on something and she'd just shoot it. It's like a funny, like I legitimately think it's a very funny joke.
It's a good joke. Yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't work. Like, uh-huh, never helped.
So Mandana hoists you up through this window, and then you can go through and open the front door. Yes. And we learn that this this ghost who is talking to us, like this kind of, you know, texting teen, right? It is a little girl named KK, 10-year-old, as a spirit guide who is bound to this medium who is nearby and kind of trapped.
Yeah. We follow KK, the directions in different mirrors and reflective surfaces to find this man in the bathroom. He's sitting in a glowing circle speaking the Serenity Prayer, and there are three ghosts looking at him. Yes. And this is Logan, who you met in the prologue.
Yes.
It was not my prologue, but it was a near prologue. I like Logan a lot.
Logan's great.
In terms of just kind of like charisma, this is probably my favorite character in it. He's nice and has a good head on his shoulders.
He's trying to send these ghosts on their way, but he, you know, you need details. You need to learn about their, you know, learn their names, right? And he's been trapped here for days, basically. So we have to go looking around the house to give him ammunition.
Yes. We find this notebook, these pages that were burned in the tenant's house. This is where Eli gets another power. I think he mentioned this in the basement.
He does, yes.
He can fire read, which is if you can read anything that has been burned. There is a minor little engine creakiness thing here that happens that's frustrating. You need him to read the thing, but you don't. You don't use him on the thing to read because I guess it's too dangerous to do it here.
Yeah.
You have to talk to him outside specifically. He won't do it anywhere else.
Right.
And it was just this, that was a minor roadblock for me. So we can read these notes and you basically find out the story of what happened here.
Right. So this young woman named Dana rented this room to be close to campus, but it is just this nightmare living situation. The owners of the house, Jess and Art, are these two stoners who have a nightmare dog. The dog, you know, used to sleep in that room and is constantly bothering her and not letting her study. Right. Her grades are failing. You know, and apparently, you know, us talking to her, we gave her some ideas about what she should do about the situation.
Yeah. We take these names to Logan. They don't work. The ghosts fuse together into something called a poltergeist, which is apparently very scary.
They're going geist.
They say they're going geist. So they need more. They need objects. You know, so we go around the house. We get these visions. The demon-possessed version of you seduced the husband there. This happens regardless of your gender. You know, I played a guy and ended up doing that. And they talk about keeping a memento to this in the garage under his heart rate.
Yes.
This is his vanity plate for his car. Another vision has Jess confronting Dana. Dana poisoned the dog.
And then our character in this flashback walks in and suggests, like, hey, Jess, you should kill Dana. She killed your best friend, right?
Yeah, she killed your dog. You get the garage door opener from the mailbox. This is one of those things where they have to tell you to search there. Get a battery from this hula dancing doll to power it up. In the garage, you can get the shovel and use the screwdriver to get under the vanity plate heart rate or art rate rather. Find this photo of you having sex with the husband.
Right.
There are a lot of very the less we talk about this, the better things that I'm sure they do regardless of gender, but read a little differently. Playing a guy.
Right.
It read a little panicky. You know, just like I'm so embarrassed, like all of this stuff, and it just added that little edge.
With the female character, it's more just like, hey, this is degrading, like my agency was taken away for this.
It is a sexist.
Well, it's the same for everything. You get these other visions, like you get Jess confronting Art about sleeping with your demon possessed self. And then you suggest, hey, Art, you should kill her. And then Art goes to commit
suicide.
It's your
answer to everything.
And then Art goes to commit suicide by running the car in the garage with the door closed. Yep. Right.
And this is how you get your objects. The doll that the dog destroyed, the Borders doll, the dog's buried dog collar, the dog's buried collar, and then the photo from the car, an important object of his infidelity and suicide cause. One of the funniest things that happens in this game happens here, where you can't understand the ghost and they have one dot wave for their like ghostly moan. If you skip through dialogue at all, it's just kind of like, all right, let's do Okay, are you gonna like you just constantly being interrupted by evil ghost noises? It's very funny.
But like all of this stops them from going Geist, and then Logan is finally able to send them, you know, send them on. Yeah.
Yep. And we get on the subway, or as we go back to it, Logan asks if he and KK can join us, and we're like, yeah, we need one of you guys.
Yes.
Kalish be damned.
Right. And so we go and do a home base check-in. We wake up the next morning and we see this floating orb by our bed, quickly yes. leaves the room. And by talking to the others, we learn that this is KK. Like, this is how she appears to us. We yes. can see her now as this.
Through
because,
a psychic link. Because yes. all unavowed carry a psychic link.
Right.
Yeah. So you go to Staten Island, and I take Logan with me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, why wouldn't I?
New power.
New
guy.
Yeah. Yeah, new power. Wanted to see what was going on. I also think I took Eli as well. Generally liked Eli. I tried to switch up party members.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and ended up kind of for the last few missions doing teams on accident.
Oh yeah.
We'll have Logan and Eli, like all ladies are all guys.
Mm-hmm.
Just on accident.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So we head there, and near the ferry terminal, we can walk west and we see this cop standing over a dead body by this 9/11 memorial. And a woman named Vicky is arguing with the cop, who is really passive about the whole thing. And we get this kind of arc words. Whenever anybody is asked about these, you know, horrible killings that are happening, they say, it's just a tragedy. That's all it is.
Yeah. This is such a cool idea.
Yep.
The end of this being, it's from a psychic merman.
Uh-huh.
who cruises after you in a speedboat. It's kind of the sauce that I'm talking about is missing.
Yeah.
From some of these things, like that is a great, that's a super cool idea.
Uh-huh.
In the pocket for that trope. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of want the scene to be scarier or something.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You know, like the tone, the goof, balance is real weird.
Mm-hmm.
So the gigantic surfing Atlantean merman is coming. That could have been playing during that whole part. It was on ever. But this first part, this was like, for me, this is a part where the game woke up. I was like, oh, this is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, everyone is under some kind of guise.
Yeah.
You know, to do this. So we follow the cop. Yeah. We follow her around. She goes in to do this bartender, Vinny, you know, this, and talks to a cop who happens to be her brother. As we're following around, we get the stuff. And everyone we ask about the murders will just say it's a tragedy, nothing more.
Right.
You know, like, and they can't say anything else.
No. No.
Yeah.
There's an alley behind Vinny's where this ghost is waiting. And when we talk to her through Logan, she's just like, oh, I'm the soldier. I serve the general.
Yeah. Yep. The insurance guy.
Call 1-800.
We end up finding the general when we go to the waterfront and we get a memory of our past self. And this is where, again, the super cool idea jumps this weird shark.
Uh-huh.
Our past self walks up to the water and summons this gigantic merman.
Uh-huh.
Like a 16-foot tall mega merman.
Yeah. Like a Dagon kind of looking thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's fighting this endless and pointless battle. There's a mermaid blood war going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Our demon presents a deal. Like, listen, I've got something right. for you.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to find out what that is.
Yeah. We go into the police precinct where Vicky was raising hell and everybody was just giving her nothing. And by talking to the captain who's at the desk, Captain Joy Harrison, she lets slip the person who died's name. Like, hey, did somebody die back there? It's like, oh, yeah, Marlene shouldn't have said that. Right.
Yep.
And then we use that to get her to talk. You know, she was hiding this master key to the bar because she was Vinny's wife under this brick when like everything went black and she disappeared and was conscripted by the merfolk to fight this war against forces in the forest.
Yeah. The blood war of water versus tree.
Yeah.
Logan sends her on. If you want to get, if you're an Achievo person, the only mechanical benefit for certain party compositions is Logan can, exercise ghosts and send them on. If you want to get the achievement for doing every ghost in the game, you have to take Logan with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
After you get him. I didn't do this. There are ghosts too. That's none of my business. So use the key or go ahead.
Oh, when you talk to Logan in between missions, like he'll say like, yeah, no, I heard about that ghost. So I'm going to go there and take care of that myself.
Yeah. He takes care of it on his own.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things I like about Logan, he is the opposite of a martial character.
Mm-hmm.
Like he just can talk to ghosts. but he's just a gentle recovering alcoholic. You get that backstory, if you didn't have it from the intro, when you go to the bar here. He talks about how he knows this place. You know, this is going to be hard for him to go in, but he has to face his fears. And he goes in. This key that we have, we can check out this weird little squatting half apartment that's under the bar. This is where Vicky, the cop we saw arguing, this is where she lived. And she's been investigating these murders that no one will believe her about.
You know, she wrote herself this note, you know, like, you know, look under the crazy. Then you have to use this butter knife up on the wall. It says you are not crazy. And then you have to use the knife on this brick under the word crazy to pry out and get this key for a storage locker.
But when you go outside, she's there. She holds you at gunpoint, demanding you go with her to the precinct and convince people that she's not crazy. You know, she's been seeing things ever since she took this bullet during a mass shooting. Through there. And everyone's real calm about this. It's very funny. So Eli eventually demonstrates fire magic. To show that she's not crazy.
Supernatural things are real. I am one of them. We are here to help.
She storms off. She's in denial. So we can go into the storage building nearby. And when we go there, Vicky locks us in. She just can't quit us. She's intending to bring the cops down. But her brother comes in again under this kind of geese and opens fire. Brainwashed. She dives under a thing. We are trapped in the storage room and we have to help her from within.
So to get out, if you have Eli, I don't know how you do this with other people. You've got to rewire this door panel, and connect the door open mechanism to the sprinklers, which seems like a terrible idea.
It's a horrible, it's a very hilarious three part wiring system.
Seems really easy to make a mistake there.
It seems like Mandana generally can wedge open doors. With her sword. So she might just like wedge it open.
You know? But you rewire and then have Eli set off the sprinklers to open the door.
And, you know, this helps. Eli blows up the brother's gun in his hand. And his captain comes in, Joy. She's the one who brainwashed, or we find out rather talking to him, that Joy brainwashed him into killing us. And she's about to get away on her night boat.
There's always an inlet.
So we run to the boat, and then the general emerges behind us. So we're all on the boat. We jump on the boat that she's on, that's speeding in the river. The engine cannot support this. This looks so interminably dorky and like dead action wise.
The only boat chase that is more ridiculous than this is the boat chase at the end of the first Dino Crisis.
It's real up there. So the general emerges behind you, chasing you, you know, and he explains what happened. Your old self made a deal. He could grant his mind control powers, which he has as a mermaid who's fighting a blood war. To somebody influential who can send him soldiers to fight his war on the land. So basically, the very complicated thing your demon self did was convince the king of the mermaids to give psychic powers to the king of the cops so she can get people killed. So he could have souls for the blood war against trees.
And so we've got to figure out how to stop this chase from happening, you know, so we don't get so we don't get killed. If you have Mandana with you, you can lower this kind of like pole. And send her out on it. I tried. What I thought I had to do was lower the pole and then suddenly stop the boat so he would be impaled on it.
Because there's a way to stop the boat, and when you do it, they just go, "What are you doing?" and start it again.
I'm trying to call a Cthulhu. This thing. Come on.
So this is the only times where there is chaff is when there is one party member's solution. Very clearly. So I spent some time doing that too because it would work. You know, but you don't do that. Instead, you find this gas can, throw it at him, and then have Eli set him on fire.
And you know, the chase has stopped. You know, the gig is up, and we're left with this decision about what to do with the general. We can send him back to his realm, or we can kill him. And then we're also left with the decision of what to do with Joy. You know, do we send her with him to, you know, to fight in this war, or do we let her stay?
I did the same thing you did. Sent the general back, kept Joy here. You know, just thinking that she might be useful. And then also just not really her fault either. Demon self went and did this.
Second chances and stuff. We know what she is, and that's what we exist here to do.
Uh, Vicky comes along. So Vicky's now in the Unavowed. Her power is having a gun.
Her power is having a gun. I really like Vicky, actually. Like, yeah, she's a little bit extra, but just her power being that she knows every single cop, like her power being cop talk is actually really interesting. Like, she's the most mundane of them. But just getting through these situations just by leveraging actual social connections is very interesting to me.
I think that's cool too. I think the thing that that lets me down is the performance, which is the big accent, you know, and I understand people in New York actually do sound like cartoons from New York sometimes.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but it's just really extra.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Staten Island accent is incredible.
Yeah.
Here. And Eli's kind of doing like a hard-boiled detective. Like everyone's kind of doing a voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it kind of belies it's like, you know, indie roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a voice acting studio, like the performances are fine, but there is something that is like charactery about them.
It's as the characters are archetypes, so the performances are archetypical. Yes. Archetypal too. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that's when I talk about the micro level of the writing in this not being super great. That's what I mean. Like, I like some of the archetypes of these characters. There's not a whole lot of like relevant detail to their background that makes them feel real to me. You know, they feel charactery.
Yeah.
In a way that is kind of a little bit hard to express. Vicky, who's going to come join the Unavowed, and she swears she's going to kill Joy if Joy ever leaves Staten Island.
Yeah.
So luckily there's a failsafe.
So now that we have our crew together, we can go to Astor Place. Return to the East Village in order to figure out find missing threats from the squad, right?
Yeah, there was a ghost there, and we didn't have a ghost whisperer at the time. I took the ghost whisperer to talk to the ghost here, along with Vicky, Fish, to look at the scene with the Dryad basement, the leaf basement.
You can't take Logan and Vicky at the same time. You have to have, you always have to have one.
Oh, you
have to have
one of the originals. I can't remember who I took.
One of the OGs.
So I guess I didn't take Vicky, but I did take Logan.
Yeah. It's actually kind of cool what happens when there's a situation like this where you absolutely need one. Like, you don't have to like, oh, well, I guess I've got to go back to the subway and do this. Like the other person will just tap in, like they'll just show up. So, you know,
you can't actually go back to the subway as well.
Yeah.
If you decide. Yeah. So again, I do think that is kind of cool in terms of making it a greased rail. It is another axis on which like agencies remove though, right? Like what is happening here, where there could be a opportunity for gameplay in this game would be, I'm choosing a party who I think might be useful. You know, it presents the illusion of that. Like mid-level BioWare is a great comparison point actually, because of, it has a lot of the same false like gameplay things, right? You're not choosing a party for a thing because any party will work. And if somebody is absolutely demanded, they just show up.
Yes.
You know, it's really good in terms of not grinding things to a halt. And I would not have preferred having to go back to base and like rearrange my fridge.
Right.
It just means that you can't make a wrong decision. It is part of the greased rail nature of this, almost, you know, to a degree that I think is a little bit detrimental to it as a video game personally.
Yeah. So the way this works, if you bring Vicky along, she'll take prints off of this, off the dead man in the basement, who's kind of overgrown with this moss. And she calls in a favor to get a fingerprint ID on this guy as a petty thief named Harry Taylor, been unhoused since 2009. And then, you know, she leaves and sends Logan back. So with this name, you're able to, send him along.
Yep. Doing that, however, the door grows over with these vines as we try to leave after we send them along. And a dryad shows up, Galeen. And she calls you by name. This is the first time we've heard Malcaressa, the name of the demon, saying that you went back on your deal and took her last worshiper away. So she was banished to the Northwoods, which is Central Park, centuries ago. And the demon made a deal to try to help her get around that banishment.
Right. And then Galeen will take Mandana, here. I assume if you have Eli, she'll take Eli, but takes Mandana with her and then, disappears. And we return to Kalash saying like, hey, you know, I'm going to go with you, you know, just you and the other veteran member, you're going to go and get her back. You know, this is not going to be a fight. This is going to be, you know, a negotiation.
Yes. Yeah. So we go to Central Park, where it is all, grown over. this groove, and whoever your character that you have with you, either Eli or Mandana, runs ahead.
Yes.
Ends up getting trapped as well. So in the end, they're both trapped. They're wrapped in these trees with these intoxicating poisonous vines. And Galeen, we find out the way she was banished was by Kalish.
Right.
And she forces Kalish into combat, but he's been out of the game for a long time.
Right. And they make a big deal like, oh, we're going to be fighting under the rules of engagement. Yes. You know, it makes sense with a djinn that everything would be, you know, contracted out like that. Yep. Their reward for, you know, for whoever issues the death blow is going to be a wish, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, Galeen, if she gets her wish, is going to destroy New York by poison ivying it.
Yes. Yeah. And our wish is to get our friends back.
Right.
You know, so Kalish hits her with a magical axe. She dissipates and then comes back. You know, she's like, I cannot be killed on my home turf. This happens again, a comical number of times.
Yep.
you know, as you're trying to figure things out. This is a good puzzle.
I like this. Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of the intuitive leaps. Like, the game doesn't have a whole lot of things I consider, like, I had aha moments. This is an aha moment.
Yeah, because, like, this will keep repeating. You know, Kalish will hit her and she'll dissipate, and you have time to do one thing before she comes back and then hits him again, poisoning him.
Yes.
And so, like, you can talk to him and say, like, hey, you know, like, what's going on? Like, you know, every time you try to interfere, you're stopped, and you get, basically, he'll hand you over the printout of the rules for this, you know, saying like, oh, you know, nobody can interfere, but whoever lands the, you know, whoever lands the decisive killing blow will get the wish, right?
Yes.
And so you try everything and it ultimately comes down. There is only one thing you can do, which is to pick up Mandana's sword and kill Kalash yourself.
Yep. You get the killing blow.
Yeah.
So you get your wish. And now, because you have the wish, even though Kalish is dead, New York isn't destroyed and you free your friends.
Right.
And you bind her in place. She can no longer harm anyone again.
Yeah. You can also use the wish to turn into a statue. Yeah.
I also made, I bound her as well. I was keeping people alive, which everyone I could keep alive, I did.
Yes.
They all came back in the last chapter.
I only killed one person. Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay.
Well, and then the ligamental, but those aren't people.
Ligamental's a person.
They don't count.
He's a real solid bro when he comes back.
I know.
Yeah. You talk about bands you like. He's been working on some demos. He took him a long time, but he actually figured out beat by beat the track to the drums to There Goes My Hero.
Okay.
And he's been working on him in GarageBand.
It's not it's not necessarily a super complicated. It's that like My Hero is more of a, that's more about like the strength of the hits on the toms than it is.
It was hard
like,
for him.
Intricate. Oh, well, I mean, everybody has to start somewhere.
He like the ligamental burned it onto a CD and it's like, I've been working on this, and you think he's going to play a song for you, but it's just him doing an all drum cover of this Foo Fighters thing. And it's real weird. Like, you don't know how to react to it.
But right. He means well. You want to encourage him because obviously he's showing some talent or at least some initiative.
Yeah. Initiative, really. Like, he has the time he's putting into this.
Yeah.
And it's like, good, good, man. But you got to work on your own stuff a little bit. And also, this is the weirdest thing you could have shown me. Like, if you just showed me a cover of that song. But this is just you emulating the drums.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah.
You burn this onto a CD. What year is this?
The Void's a couple years behind.
Yeah. They're getting, like, three-peat shirts. Like, Bart Slam Dunking shirts and stuff. Mandana's very mad. You killed her dad.
The color and the shape came out in 97, and the Bulls were pretty much past their prime by that point. You're thinking like the 95, 96 Bulls, but
there we go.
Yeah.
Two-peat.
Anyway, you killed your friend's dad, and she's not really happy with you.
So you go back to, you talk to her, you know, at this point, she's sad. She doesn't blame you. And she's like, I will continue to help the unavowed.
Right.
Now we have this name though, Melcaressa. Eli has been able to use this to make the knife, scrying more precise.
Right. And the area of most activity, this place that the demon has been returning to the most, is the place from the prologue.
Yep. There's a portal there. So either under the theater or in the bar or the precinct, presumably, there's a little portal. Yeah. Closed portal. You go there and there's a journal that the demon kept.
Mm-hmm.
The goal is to keep creating these fucked up situations of magical energy around the city. Mm-hmm. This makes it more powerful and eventually can access a pocket dimension.
Yes.
Containing everything it ever desired there. We cannot open the portal yet. The idea is as we close down more supernatural threats, the portal will open wider.
Yes.
And we have three other locations are listed in this journal.
Mm-hmm.
Brooklyn, Wall Street, and Chinatown.
Yes. It's also aware of the unavowed and is kind of wondering, like, hey, are they actually going to come after me? Like, are they, how much of a loose end are they?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So we go to these last three places here.
Yeah. Yeah. We go to cartoon caricature Brooklyn.
Yes. very, very hip. This Prospect Park neighborhood, which is very artsy. There's a lot of very funny graffiti that people remark upon that looks very basic.
Mm-hmm.
We go to this cafe and we see this young woman reciting poetry into an empty room. I know this lady.
Mm-hmm.
She is she calls Eli Alden. Mm-hmm. Which is the name of his great grandfather. If we've been doing our check-ins, we find out about his pathos.
Yes.
His great grandfather was a fire mage. Fire mages go crazy and burn things down eventually.
Right.
But I recognize her. This is Calliope. She was my Callie now. She's a muse, but she's lost her ability to inspire.
Right. But this is not bad, right?
Yeah, she loves it.
Yeah, it's great. She no longer, she was unable to enjoy art because all she could see was the way that it was made. Now she's actually able to enjoy things, right?
Yes.
And so she's just here, scaring everybody away with her very bad spoken word poetry, just trying to give back to the art scene, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of living, right? She gets to be mundane.
Yeah. She recognizes whoever you have with you. Mm-hmm. I had Madonna.
Okay.
With me here, I figured I would get her out to distract her after killing her father. And they're old. They go way back.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You cross the street to the park and get a vision of your old self summoning Callie and taking her power from there.
Yeah.
There's a ghost that will forever remain unexercised. I know that he eventually goes back, but
There's a ghost over here. Also, right outside the park, there is a young mother with her daughter standing out in the rain, and her daughter has been drawing in chalk on the sidewalk for hours. Like she can't get this kid to walk back, to go inside. Right.
Yeah. This is having done the intro like that I did. I was like, oh, I know what this is.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know what this happened to my friend. Like this happened to my friend Bill or whatever, like reading Eric, the Joker. Eric, this happened to my friend Eric. There's a bagel shop where there is a caricature cop and a caricature hipster, talking about the hipster who is following his muse of creating new and different bagels.
Yeah.
He quit the art industry to devote himself to bagels full time.
Yep. It's surly hipster who's just obsessed with making these rainbow colored bagels, right?
Yes.
Ask about this death. What it was is this artist in the middle of the night built this crazy metal sculpture out there and then climbed up into it and then lit himself on fire at midnight.
Yes.
Right? His ID burned up and nobody has any clue who he was. But if you have Eli with you, you're able to do his fire reading to learn that he was a man named Amos Fennell.
Yeah. I can't remember how I got this without him. I know I didn't have Eli with me.
You could have
at this point.
If Mandana can climb up into the sculpture and get a scrap of leather.
His journal. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
He has a piece of his name on is up there and Mandana climbed up.
Yeah.
That is literally it. Her climbing superpower of upper body strength.
I had Vicky with me, so I was like, hey, maybe she can.
I had her shoot it as well.
Takes pot shots at it.
That is the funniest joke in this game.
It is, yeah.
There's a really funny joke that I don't know if it's intentional at the end of the chapter. We'll get to it. But that shooting thing is very good. So we find out his name. We ask Callie about it. And she has a cool power. She was originally intended to be a companion, but they ran out of time to come up with situations
for
her, and she was too late in the game. But even though she doesn't have the power to inspire anymore, because she has so much experience in that, she can read the intentions behind people's artwork.
Yes.
So she can look at a poem and know what the person was feeling and what they're trying to get across.
Yes.
That's a cool superpower.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
you know, and you know, we could say like, hey, like, do you want your powers back? He's like, no, I love this. Right.
Yeah.
So we can ask the cop about Amos. And he's like, hey, he was this troublemaker. He was constantly breaking this restraining order with this woman named May. This happens to be the mom, of the little kid June, who won't stop drawing. Right.
Yes. We talked to her. She's reluctant. You know, she hears that once you, she hears that he's dead, she reveals the story. He was studying under this art teacher, and started drawing her and her daughter obsessively.
Yeah.
So she could about, that's all you do. This art teacher, we've met him before. It's this old guy who's sitting outside the cafe.
Yeah. It's a local color, right?
Yep.
This guy named Stanley, just sitting in the rain and talking to people who pop by. Old guy. And he's really blasé about this student of his, you know, catching himself on fire, to say like, wow, what a statement, right? You can say something really fucked up here, which is like, oh, if it's such a statement, you should let yourself on fire too. It was like, kind of going hard against his old man.
Turns out he deserves it. Like, we're not going to find that out just yet, but you know, he's very blasé about this. He mentors people in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, he's talked to the daughter who's doing all the sidewalk chalk art, the baker who's making more and more colored bagels.
Uh-huh.
You know, we get one of these bagels, these rainbow bagels. We take it to Callie to read the bagel.
Mm-hmm.
And we find out that the inspiration, she's like, oh, shit, I recognize my work. Mm-hmm. Bagels of this nature could only be inspired by the power of the muse. So whoever has my powers is the one who is making these, indirectly making these super bagels.
Yeah. And the hub of this wheel, connected to everybody, is Stanley, right?
Yes.
Saying like, hey, let's come inside to talk about this. I love this moment where you walk in, you know, supposedly this lifelong artist, you walk in, his apartment is completely bare.
Yeah.
It's Ryden's room.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And he believes you what's going on. He's very, again, very blasé about it. He's like, no, this is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm going to bring art back to this neighborhood. And you'd be like, people are killing themselves. You know, the kid is not close behind. Clay is going to bagel kill himself at some point. Like, and he's like, no. Like, you can't stop me. And he sends you into a realm, this creativity realm.
Yes. It's kind of like heaven, right? You're standing up on this plinth in the middle of these clouds. And he asks, like, how are you feeling? And you're compelled to answer. You can try not to answer, but you're forced to. And I say, like, oh, I'm angry. And then you wake up in the apartment, spray painting the name Mel Caressa on the wall.
Dude, like, it's outside by the subway, and you're doing every letter in a different color. You waking up with the shock of this, doing a Technicolor, just Mel Caressa on the wall, and everyone talking about like, oh, this is your artistic expression of your inner self kind of thing. Like, come on. Like, when I saw the super Technicolor Mel Caressa, I laughed really.
Yeah.
And again, it kind of plays into this, like, I want this to have more edge to it, right? This idea, this thing he's doing to people is very scary.
It is, yeah.
You know? And the idea of he can force you to create the art that expresses your true self is a great idea.
It's fantastic. For horror. Yeah.
I've never been less scared of a video game. And I'm not saying like I wanted to actually feel visceral fear, but the tone is just like super goofy.
There could have been something way cooler than every character who gets affected by him just writing something very on the nose on the wall.
Yeah. And I think it's an engine creak in some ways, right? Yep. Like you can't do that much in an adventure game studio, but part of it is this tone that just doesn't have, that is more J. Michael Straczynski than Peter Milligan. Like there's just not bite to this, you know? I want there to be a little bit more bite.
Yeah, I agree.
Than this. Yeah. So May can't get her daughter to stop drawing. You know, you are snapped out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Clay is detained by cutting himself and bleeding into the mixing bowl.
Yeah, I need to put myself in my art.
Trying to make blood bagels.
Uh-huh.
Another blood bagel related arrest. And you go into Stanley's house and you see your two companions drawing on the wall.
Right.
Eli
is drawing this huge eye on the wall. In the living room, and Vicky is upstairs drawing the stick figure on the wall. So like, hey, we need to go. We need to get Callie. She's, you know, kind of the source of this. She'll know what's going on. Right.
Yep.
And she's distressed, saying like, hey, Stanley's misusing my power. People are going to die. I did not know when I gave it up that it would end up, you know, with somebody who would do this. So take her to the house and she says like, hey, you know, you can kind of like mind meld with your teammates, to get at the root of what's compelling them. You go in and you get a little scene inside the creativity realm with the people that you're with in order to figure out what's at the root of what they're doing. So like Eli is looking at his deceased wife who is facing away and obsessing like, oh my God, I've forgotten so much. It's been, you know, decades since I've seen her. You know, like I can't remember what her eyes look like. You know, she's like the last thing anchoring me to the human world. Right.
Yes. Yeah. And Donna is talking about her mixed heritage here, how she's kind of from two worlds because her mother was a human. That is her struggle between her father and her mother.
Yes.
And you eventually you had to convince her that she's both.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't have to choose. And then when that happens, you find out she is drawing a gigantic yin yang.
Cool. with Eli, you convince him like, hey, you know, the eyes are just the window to the soul. You knew her soul, right?
Yeah.
And then you go back out and you see that up on the wall is this eye with the iris filled in with a bunch of different colors.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Art therapy. Vicky is just mad. At people who kind of betrayed her, who don't acknowledge her. You know, she wants to be a hero. She never got recognition as a cop. And you can convince her like, hey, you know, you will help people doing this.
Yes.
You know, you're now a fucking superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it turns out she was drawing.
Yes.
A little version of her in a cape.
Yeah. I don't know what Logan has. Probably guilt over Jonah, probably.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Stan comes back and Callie says, hey, we have to kill this guy.
Gotta ice this fucker.
he's gotta be iced. And he's like, no, I can learn. And you know, we can kill him or leave him, or we can ask Callie to take the power back. I didn't try to ask that. I didn't want to take away her life. So I left him. Like again, I left everybody. Mandana can tell, who's telling the truth. And he is telling the truth about,
wanting to get better.
And she's like, it doesn't mean he necessarily will, but he wants to. I was like, that's good enough for me.
Which, and when we know he's active, we can stop him if we need to. Again, same logic as with Joy.
We know where everyone is. We can kill them if need be.
Next place I went was Wall Street. But before you go there, you've got to talk with Eli, who has more information about this Melcaressa. This is a spirit that was synonymous with knowledge. Right. People would summon it to learn things, but summoning it would always require a blood sacrifice.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Yes.
So we go to Wall Street here and we get a vision of ourselves making a deal with this executive named Jason to save something called the Grant City Trust.
Yeah. We spot this woman who is putting up missing persons posters for her son. Right. Her son, Elijah. She goes upstairs to her apartment. You can do something horrible, which is take the information from this poster and then just buzz her up and say, hey, I'm asking you about your son.
I think that's what I had to do with my party composition. And she's like, you may as well come up.
Yeah. No. Like, but I did it like right away. It's like, and then you have nothing but to say like, well, I'm wishing you luck. She's like, why are you wasting my time? This is horrible.
Rubbing it in. Instead, you have to go talk to a cartoon. There's a man protesting by the bronze bull statue, talking about how Grant City Trust, you know, is these uncaring giants that trample over everyone and steal our future, doing Occupy. You know, a cartoon version of a one man Occupy.
Right.
The idea.
What's happening with him is more interesting. But this idea, stealing our future, you know, it's speaking in code.
He is a little cartoon man, but he does have a cooler background than that.
So we go into the bank here, this Grand City Trust, and we talk with this very helpful security guard. It's Chris Farley in Wayne's World.
I love this guy.
We learn that the founder, Jason Grant, recently died of a heart attack, like right outside. And the bank is now run by this mysterious fella named Roy Fellows, who the security guard has never seen enter or never seen him come and go.
So you run these names by everybody. You can run them by the lady with the missing son, but you want to run them by the protester.
Yes.
Found out this guy's name is Hugh. And Mandana, if she's there, figures out that he's under some kind of influence.
Right.
You know, he speaks the truth, but he's being indirect.
Right. And, you know, he's indirectly asking us for help with what's compelling him, right? While still speaking in these,
jargon.
In this jargon.
Slogans. Yeah. Blasphemax and so forth.
Right.
So you go to the security guard. He goes, "What's up with that guy?" He's like, "Oh, I'll tell you about that guy as well. Uh-huh. He used to be the vice president here, but one day he snapped and lit some documents on fire, throwing them into the bullpen."
Right.
I definitely did not have Mandana with me because I remember fire reading these.
Okay.
And that is how I got that next little bit of information.
Gotcha. There.
But I think anybody who's touched can tell that he's compelled.
Right.
There.
Yeah. I didn't have Eli with me, so I was not able to fire read this. I had Mandana and Vicky with me because I also wasn't able to talk to the ghost once I had the name. So
yeah.
But you take this, however you get it, you take this back to Hugh and say, like, yeah, so what was the deal with you lighting that fire? And he starts speaking in negatives, you know, more directly than he has been, basically saying, my boss did not make me kidnap the coworker's baby. And yes. I am not, being magically forced to say that I'm not. And, you know, he broke the rules. This chaos, he collapses. You have to call an ambulance for him. But we figured, okay, he's the culprit. We need to take this actually to the mom.
Yep. So you buzz. I think I did have Logan here because I remember talking to this ghost. Mm-hmm. I beat this a while back.
Yeah.
You know, so my memory's a little bit fuzzy. The ghost is very helpful. That's the big boss.
Yes.
Of the place is the main ghost. And you have to get his trust. He thinks he's waiting for a cab. Kind of forever. And you have to kind of get his trust before he'll break out of stuff. Regardless of which, though, use that the missing child poster to talk to Winnie Cook.
Yes. Lady.
And now we have something to say.
We do.
We can be like, yeah, we know who took your son. You go from 0 to 60 in terms of useful information for her.
Right. Yeah. She knew something was up with that place, you know, with the place where her husband Travis worked, right? You know, Hugh was her husband's coworker, and weirdly, he came over for dinner the night before Elijah disappeared.
Yeah.
You know, and then her husband Travis left soon after, you know, believing that, because the baby was in Winnie's care, but believing that she was responsible for his disappearance.
Yes. Yep. We say, "Do you mind if we look around?" She goes, "Go nuts, dig around my bedroom." So you start looking around.
Yeah.
We find this note that says, "Remember, bear," in all caps. The baby's crib has this magical residue, some like magic slime nearby, and a doll of Griff, the PI bear.
Yeah.
This little Sir Huggington.
Mm-hmm.
There. And because we know the name of Griff, Griff is the password for Winnie's computer. Everyone just puts a remember symbol as their password thing. And you read through all her emails. I cannot stress enough, she's still in the house.
Right.
She's just outside waiting for you to go hack into her computer.
Yep. But the this is Travis's computer. You're reading his
Travis's
emails.
Computer.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, I mistook the note there. Has these emails between Travis and his relatives, Julie and Gloria. We learn that he hides his passport in this in this eye and a weird mask on the wall. You know, Julie and Gloria, these people who these world travelers
market.
Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, they decorated their house with World Market. They have a gigantic African mask.
Right.
On the
right.
Despite being white ass motherfuckers.
If you have Eli here, he'll say, like, "Wait, Julia, Gloria. That's the name of my daughters. My daughters that I had to abandon once my powers awakened." Mandana will recognize, like, "Wait a minute. Like that, like those are oh no. You look at the passport photo and it looks like a hunkier version of Eli."
Yeah. If you have Eli, you actually sneak in with the ID. Here, this is like his kind of backstory. We found out through, conversations on the Normandy that they're still alive.
Yeah.
You know, he drips out a little bit in between each mission. Mm-hmm.
Regardless, if you don't have Mandana or if you don't have Eli here with you, Eli will come and swap out for the back half of this chapter.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Yeah. He wants to be there to find out about the missing kid. And he has a moment of like, going dark. He's like, "I'm going to burn this whole place down. They took my kid."
Yes.
He's convinced him not to. Eli uses the password to fake to get in, to get a temporary pass card there. And you go upstairs, see a vision of yourself and Roy Fellows compelling Hugh to place this magical charm around the baby's neck.
Yeah.
The deal was struck. And that's how we find out Fellows is a fey.
Right.
Like one of the old fey court.
Mm-hmm. And the fey are always making these deals with humans, and humans always underestimate how bad these deals are going to be.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we look in Travis's office and we see that he's been living here. And there's a note on the desk that says old man, snake, dog, man.
Yes.
Which will make sense later for a numerical code.
Yeah. So we go to Jason Grant's office. This chapter and the next one, you spend a lot of time going back and forth and going up and down elevators and shit.
Yeah, I don't care for that.
Yeah, the next one is worse. Mm-hmm. All of the stuff with using inventory to get through doors.
Yeah.
It's real slog, but this one, it kind of starts it. Mm-hmm. You can see them trying to make it a little bit more mechanically complicated. Mm-hmm. It feels like you're spending a lot of time walking back and forth, fiddling with stuff to me. Mm-hmm. You get to Jason Grant's office, and you get a vision of him confronting you, the demon, about Fellows. He demands to be how Fellows demands to be appointed to the board.
Right.
Here.
Yeah.
Read some emails. Fellows' office can only be accessed by a key card, and Grant has the key card in his safe. The combination is in a little riddle. The price of two cups of coffee, Grant's favorite wine, and the number of flower pots on the roof. The emails are between a secretary who's like, can you just tell me the fucking code? And he's like, you're fired if you can't solve my simple guessing game. because the fake order fucking annoying.
So to get up on the roof, we need to enter a little code. That is the combination that we found. The old man, dog, whatever. And then just like written on the keypad is the word legs. It's like, okay, old man walks with a cane, three legs, snake, zero legs, dog, four legs, man, two legs. There we go.
Yeah.
And then we get this touching scene. Like, we step out on the roof and we see Travis there, and Eli wants to talk to him alone.
Yes. You know, he's like, oh, is this about living in the office? Jason gave me permission. He even gave me a key. Mm-hmm. We can ask for the key, and we were like, hey, come back to your wife. She needs you. Yeah. And he's like, she lost my kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Eli says the name. He's like, oh, are you, you know, he's like, it's probably just a coincidence. I'm not your grandfather.
Right. I'm not your grandfather when I look exactly like you.
Yes. I would be so much older.
No.
We go into this office now with the key, and we get a vision of Fellows admiring the baby.
Yeah.
He's taking the baby, demanding that Jason hand the company over to him. Jason does. He's like, I just want out.
Right.
Here.
So I have Mandana with me here, Mandana and Eli. So like, she pries open the wine cabinet to get the year off of Jason's favorite wine, and enter the rest of this combination. To get the last key card to Fellows' office, to a very fun scene.
Yes. You get the key card, the elevator, and you enter an ice realm above the city. And Fellows leaves Elijah with his ice golem. They're the baby Elijah.
Yeah.
With the ice golem.
Yep.
To go to the meeting. and it is a robot, ice robot nanny.
Uh-huh. And just, he is speaking, like, engaging comfort mode. There. She's rocking the cradle. It's so funny.
It's great.
And she senses threats. She senses Eli's fire magic, and she senses Mandana's sword. Nobody can get close to her. This is a place where you can die if you try to do anything that is a threat. She has a Terminator blade arm that morphs out. It's very good. But she doesn't see the wine bottle that you've picked up as a threat. This is great. Having Mandana here for this, what you have to do is there's a little ledge that you can set the wine bottle on. And from talking to either Kalash or her back on the Normandy, you learn that they can, that anybody who's a djinn can go into any bottle. Mm. So you set this bottle down and then use Mandana on the bottle. And then she like apparates into it and then can spring out. And attack this thing from behind, cutting off its head. Problem is, when she's in there, she absorbs the wine and gets incredibly drunk. And when she is drunk, her real accent comes out. So she is the daughter of Kalash, but also this Irish pirate lady.
Queen.
Yeah. So she has like this really like just a very like pronounced Irish accent as she's slurring everything. It is very cute.
That's very cute.
Yeah.
I had Logan with me, and I think KK just distracts her.
Oh, okay.
For Eli to shoot her with fire. It's not as fun.
Yeah.
No. You get past the nanny kind of regardless, and you get the baby. You grab the baby and take it back to Travis, but Fellows pops up.
Right.
We have a deal. He warps Elijah to his arms and dangles him over the ledge.
Yeah.
You know, if I don't get the baby, you don't, I'll just find another one.
Yeah.
You know,
saying like, hey, you know, just, you leave the baby alone or it dies. Right.
Yeah.
You can't touch it. Seems like he's got us cornered. We make the deal, but then Elijah bursts into flames.
Yeah, becomes a flaming baby.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah.
And he barely can hold on to the baby, so we make a deal.
Yes.
He's, you know, burning. We're like, you call the deal off, we'll take the kid off of you.
Right.
Yeah.
And Eli said, you know, says, tells Fellow, like, hey, go back to your own world and leave us alone forever. Right. And Fellow threatens to send these hunters of Aldine, the people who killed his great grandfather, you know, after him and the baby. Right. Like, you know, just, you know, they're going to kill you. You're given a choice of what to do. And I have Eli burn this guy to the ground.
I think I have Eli burn him too, even though I thought I had saved everybody.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds, and I don't remember him coming back.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I think about the way everyone comes back in the last chapter, I don't remember this one specifically.
Yeah.
So, and it seemed like good role playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was real mad.
Yeah.
So we wake up the next morning, and our body starts moving and talking on its own.
Yeah.
We get dialogue boxes, but they don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly we have a voice. We weren't a voice character before.
Right. And our character takes us down to, you know, to send Eli, you know, for a meeting, and then speaks directly to us, speaks directly to the player, saying like, hey, you need to stop, you know, talking to me. You're breaking my concentration. You know, like, don't struggle. You're just going to fall asleep like last time anyway.
Yeah. Yep. on the subway, you know, it seems like you're out of control.
Yeah.
And when you try to talk to everybody, it doesn't work. You know, mm-hmm. your character just makes any small talk. You talk to Logan and say KK's name.
Mm-hmm.
KK can hear you.
Yes.
As you are shouting from within.
Yeah. There.
And she tells everybody that you're possessed.
Mm-hmm. Nope. And then they surround you, right? And you just warp away. And then there's a cut to hours later of you Terminator running down these maintenance hallways.
Yes. you know, a rider with your dark passenger to control.
Yes.
As you're going through, Eli cuts you off, but he's just the distraction. It wouldn't be a comic from the mid-2000s without that.
Mm-hmm.
Mondana gets the drop.
Yes.
And we get this flashback to a week before you're possessed. And we get the intro. You play through the intro again, but things are now different.
Right.
Now.
We're seeing how it actually happened.
Yes.
Like, you know, so for me, like, you go into the bar's bathroom and Jonah says, hey, the book that you gave me didn't help me get rid of KK. he wants me to kill him because he can't bring himself to do it. Right. And your character, you thank him for priming the pump, you know, for priming the pump for this ritual by trying to use the magic from the book. Right.
Mm, yeah.
And then you shoot him. And instead of just opening the book and the spirit flying out into the body, she opens it and summons Melcaressa to take the body as a vessel.
Yes.
And then goes out and shoots Sammy.
Very similar thing happens with the actor.
Yeah.
Ending. It has to establish that you were crapulent before.
Mm-hmm.
And that you wanted the demon.
Yes.
You know, so, and you gave the book. The
mm-hmm.
book came from you. Same thing happens with the playwriter.
Right.
There. And so we, you get this little talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you, the player, you have been playing this whole, this is the twist.
Mm-hmm.
You are playing as Melcaressa.
Right. And Melcaressa is basically like this encyclopedia. You know, you have this data, but like on your own, you don't know how to think. The character, you know, whatever you named your character, you know, they're doing you who summons, you know, who summoned you in and did this, you know, did this melding, you know, does the thinking. We share memories, and then she's able to draw on this store of knowledge, right? And when you were possessed, this was Melcaressa, you, basically being so disgusted with what this awful human being was doing that you kind of went dormant. And you know, stop paying attention to what it was, right?
Yeah. So that's the twist here. The subversion of, it's not a demon possession.
Mm-hmm.
The demon is good possessing a serial killer.
Yes.
You know, like a shitty, somebody who wants to be possessed, but is also like a psychopath.
Right.
Is the idea. You know, cool story. Cool. Mm-hmm. That is a cool twist. That is a fresh thing, relatively fresh thing. So we come back to the subway tunnels. Eli casts the spirit out of your body, and KK traps it in a circle.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice kind of taunts you. You know, you've always sucked at these exorcisms.
Yeah.
You cast the wrong spirit out two times in a row.
Yeah. And Mandana's like, hey, Eli, what's that spell actually say? Like, does it say demon? He says, no, it just says wicked spirit. So what happened is when he exercised you before, he cast out the human spirit that was in there, leaving just Melcaressa and like the vague memories that you had in place. So like the ghost that is out and, you know, in the circle, he just cast out this human spirit twice. Right.
Yeah. Ghost of a human. Whereas, and you are the walking encyclopedia in your body.
Yes.
There.
Yeah.
The soul taunts you and warps away. You know, I've learned a lot of tricks. I'm still going to be doing my crapulence.
Mm-hmm.
And this changes the tenor of the group. Like, they don't trust you as much now. That's all good stuff. You wake up the next morning. Logan's like, hey, do you remember the night this photo was taken? You know, so that photo that showed up in your bit.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, say like, I remember being happy, but I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
You know, you're not a person.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. So like, you know, what are you? How are things going to go? And so gather up in the study and we decide on a new name. You know, gender neutral. You can just go with Mel because being called by your full demon name is weird.
You can also type in something. Mm-hmm. So I had, you know, Gary, and then I changed this one to Gary with more A's.
like a spooky version of Gary.
Yeah. This was just the Gary was this one. So you head out of Chinatown. I think this is the worst chapter of the game by a lot. I find this really fiddly and annoying.
Yes.
It's also the biggest chapter. There are the most locations in this to its detriment.
Yes.
You have to spend a lot of time walking between things.
Yes. Yeah. So I went with Eli and Vicky. That was kind of my established team by this point. And we show up outside of this Dragon Tree restaurant where you get a vision of yourself leaving this place and then letting a lottery ticket fly up into one of the lanterns, saying like, oh, well, it's a shame to, you know, just throw this money away. But oh, well, I have Eli shoot it down so we can take the ticket. And this is going to be our primary clue.
Yeah, you kind of start out with. I had Mandana and Vicky for this one because I couldn't heat the tea.
Oh,
I remember that specifically.
Yeah.
So there's a cook at this nearby restaurant called Wing, and you can ask like why this other restaurant is shut down, the Dragon Tree. They don't want to talk about it. There's this horrible incident.
Yeah.
There's a cop eating here as well. Who Vicky knows is going to be relevant for a few different clues.
Yeah, later. This is also a cop from the Blackwell games.
Yes.
The cook here does not want to talk about the framed lottery ticket that is kind of displayed next to the counter. Nearby, there is a grocery store where this clerk says, like, you know, hey, you ask about the restaurant. The owner's kid, Kevin, went crazy and killed his whole family 3 months ago.
Yeah. He's held at this nearby detention facility, this little like hotel Shadowrun jail that you go into. The clerk won't let you in unless you're on their approved waiting list, even if you have Vicky.
Right.
So you take the lottery ticket. You check in with the grocery clerk and find out that Kevin bought it. You find out it's a winning number.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll actually tell you. It's from the night of the murder.
Right.
So he murdered his family on the day you won the lottery.
Right. So we take this evidence to the detective eating at this restaurant and get him to get him to vouch for us, saying like, hey, and Vicky will say like, hey, two people from the same neighborhood winning this full jackpot. Like, you know that the feds have investigated shit like this for less. Like, this is going to come down on you. So let us figure out what's going on. And then he calls ahead for us so we can get in, even though Vicky is no longer on the force.
Yep. We go and talk to Kevin, who loses it when he sees you. Because you used to be a demon. He tells the cop on duty to lock you up and says the dragon must be put back. you get his personal effects which includes this paper that has these details about dragons, how many times they pray, how many times they water a field, et cetera. And there's a receipt for the grocery store.
Right. This dragon poem is encoded near the Dragon Tree restaurant. There are these two columns with these two different colored dragons there. This is which tooth you have to push on, yes, on each of their jaws in order to open up the door.
Yep. This is how they chose this instead of a lock.
Yeah.
for their restaurant. You get into the restaurant, but there's a little of note here. The power is off.
Yeah.
There's a big fish tank full of dead fish. And you can go up to where the family owned it. Their apartment is above.
Right. There's a financial statement on the whiteboard that shows recent credit card transactions, and this doesn't line up with the receipt that was in the personal effects. The transaction at the grocery store, the total doesn't match. The actual charge was $25, whereas, you know, the receipt shows 10. So there's some kind of like accounting stuff going on.
Yep, some cash stuff. There's a note in the master bedroom written by Kevin's dad, telling him to put her back in the morning. We don't know who that is yet. And this greenhouse has this big list of names on it, stretching back to the 20s. Mm-hmm. The last one before Kevin's is Wing, the cook mm-hmm. at the restaurant. They both won the lottery.
Yeah. So we go and ask her, like, hey, what's your name doing on this list with this other lottery winner? She's like, hey, I don't want to say anything because pressing in this direction will draw the ire of something called the Ba Zha Gui.
Yes. And you can ask about that. Nobody wants to talk about it.
No.
You take the credit card statement to the grocery clerk and be like, this doesn't add up. And he admits, like, no, I sold him this illegal herb, the hibiscus rue, mm-hmm. that will induce sleep. He sells some to you, mm-hmm. But he does not know about the Ba Zha Gui, mm-hmm. or the banana ghost, as we're going to find out.
The least intimidating name for a dragon ghost.
But banana ghost does kind of bury the lead on the gigantic dragon.
Yeah.
The luck dragon.
So there's a reference book in the house or in the apartment that just has all this Asian folklore stuff, and you read about the banana ghost. So what it does is it will appear and give you lucky numbers if you tie a ribbon from a banana tree and lead it to your bed, and then you drink the sleeping potion, and it will give you the winning lottery numbers, but you're going to be cursed forever if you don't set the ghost free afterwards. So that's, you got to put the dragon back.
Yep. So you recreate this ritual. You take the ribbon, you tie it to the tree, you throw it down several floors to the bed. There you have to drink the tea. If you don't have Eli with you, mm-hmm. to heat up the tea, you have to go to the restaurant lady and the flagging on this is really irritating. I kept using the tea honor and it wouldn't work. You have to talk to, you have to do it through dialogue.
I
had already gotten to the I've exhausted your dialogue.
Oh shit.
Portion, you know, so it felt mm-hmm. like this felt a little dirty pool.
Yeah.
Regardless, which she'll give you hot water.
Yeah.
And you wake up in this, dark version of the real world.
Right. It's bright red. Everything is colored over with that. And you walk out on the balcony and you are trapped there by this huge dragon, insisting that Kevin comes and dismisses her. She hasn't eaten in months, and she keeps sending him nightmares. So that's why he's so on edge that, and you killed his entire family in front of him and he's been in jail.
Yes. No. A spirit pulls you through the door to safety, though. This is KK, your temporary mm-hmm. companion. You can see her. KK is a young girl. Mm-hmm. who is mischievous, very happy for being dead. Mm-hmm. It's fun that you get her during this part. This introduces the mechanic that's very annoying about this, though, is that you're going to start shifting between the real world and the ghost world using reflective surfaces.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in the ghost world, you can't go through a door. You have to click on KK and then click on the door.
Yes. And if you just by reflex click on a door to go through it, you're going to bounce off of it and then KK will have a little quip.
You have to click through the quip, and it will happen a lot, or at least it mm-hmm. happened a lot to me.
Yep.
And it's very fiddly,
mm-hmm.
So now we have to get Kevin out of jail so we can put the dragon to sleep.
Right.
And you do this little puzzle sneaking into a jail, using mirrors, in locker rooms and this bucket, in order to get into the jail.
Right.
There. You can just go talk to him initially, but you're going to have to get a uniform.
Right.
For him to get out. You tell him what's going on, and he's like, I can't just walk out of here.
Yeah. So you have him distract this guard so you can dose the guard's coffee with this herb to knock him out. And then you go around to like the different locker rooms to get, shirt and pants and take the guard's hat. And this is just adventure game stuff. Like one of the locker doors, creaks when you open it, drawing attention on you. So you've got to lubricate it.
It's adventure game stuff mixed with like Water Temple. You know, in that you have to constantly be going back and forth between these reflective surfaces.
Always be shifting. Yeah.
Yeah. Always be shifting, either to be in stealth or something like that. Yeah. It's very fiddly. Mm-hmm. You get the uniform, get a hat from the sleeping guard and give it to him so he can sneak out. Yeah. He walks right by the cops. They're complaining about their missing uniform, missing pants and shirts.
Yeah.
And your power wears off as soon as you leave the station. You're not going to walk between worlds during the next chapter.
Nope.
Back at the apartment, Kevin goes to send the dragon back, but he demands before he'll do it $1 million jackpot because he wants to buy the restaurant back.
Right. You know, his life has been ruined. Yeah.
Yeah. The dragon says, "This might kill me and also fuck you." Mm-hmm. Like, you summoned me and didn't put me back. I've been starving.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to keep giving you nightmares. and it's basically up to us what we do.
Yeah. I let him get his $1 million jackpot because, you know, his life was ruined, you know,
Of
course he can do
it.
I have more sympathy for the human than for the dragon who threatened to eat me. So
the dragon's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
During this, this is our end game. We go into, you can go into the portal now.
Yes.
Go to the bar or the theater or wherever your opening area was and go into the pocket dimension.
Right.
Everyone comes with you. Mm-hmm. You get your Mass Effect before the end. Everyone kind of saying they're.
Everyone fucks.
Yeah. You go down on all of them. You get the everyone says their little piece.
Yes. Here,
and you go through the portal. Mm-hmm. And everything on the other side looks the same until we walk out and we see a Doctor Strange, you know, twisted version of New York with things floating in the air.
Yeah. And then the Empire State Building is lit up like a beacon. Obviously, we have to head there, but there are going to be a series of trials on the way.
Yeah. And what these are, so like you get this vision of your old self trying and failing to summon spirits from there. Mm-hmm. You know, it turns out your physical body is trying to do the same until others wake you up. So he's taken control of you again.
Yeah.
But this gives you a spell of summoning that allows you to summon the mythological creatures you spared.
Yes.
In the previous sections. And like, this is a thing where you can see that they're trying to make everything come together at the end, but it's too lock and key.
Yeah.
You get to a path, you can't do a thing. Mm-hmm. You just click on one of your guys and click on them.
Yeah.
You know, somebody you saved.
Some of these can be solved by multiple of the spirits that you got. They're trying to make it so, like, in a way, I kind of admire the logic grid that leads to this being solvable. You know, you're trying to get to the end with as many people as you can. This is not like the ending of Mass Effect 2, where, like, you know, people will die if you leave them behind. It's just you are spending these resources to get through, you know, to the next one. Right.
I don't think there's a fail case in it.
Right.
The thing. I think even if you didn't spare any creatures, you can probably still just get through this just fine.
Yeah. Just by leaving
the endings aren't dependent on it.
Yeah. Leaving your party members behind at these places.
Yes. Yeah. You know, which you end up having to leave a couple of party members behind, but it didn't feel like I made an appreciable difference. Mm-hmm. When I got to the end, the guy just put my party members to sleep.
Yes. Yeah.
So I wasn't incentivized to keep more people alive for it, you know? So a cool idea, but again, I don't like love the execution of this.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Yeah.
So you head down this path. There's a gap in a bridge you can't cross. And you can call people back. To do this, you can have the general carry you across. That is paid.
Right. You can only summon them once, it is. I don't know how you get across this with spending a teammate on it. You get to this maze of streets. The map is useless there. Like, even the compass rose is spinning. And you always end up back there. I summon Stanley, the muse, to determine the purpose of the map, like, you know, the person who created it. And the map was created to conceal this button that would make this wall disappear, revealing the path forward.
Yep. Same. There's a big ice gate. You summon Jordan, the fire elemental, to melt it. This is where you get to hear that, like, he's kind of slowly learning the language and stuff. Good for him.
Yeah.
He melts it. There's a big tangle of thorns. Even though, like, Galeen hates us, you can summon her.
Yeah.
To get rid of it because she's bored.
Yeah. You reach this cave of ghosts, and it's the ghosts of the people that you killed in the opening, right?
Yep.
For me, it was Sammy and Jonah. They appear and go geist. I don't have any more summons. I think you could summon Roy Fellows or somebody here for this, or the
Roy
dragon.
Fellows or the dragon, I assume.
Yeah. So this is the first person I have to leave behind, leaving Logan here to keep them busy.
Same thing with the next one too. There's a river of lava. Eli can use his power to suck the heat out of it, but it's going to take it out of him. So he passes out.
Right.
So this is the person I got to take with me here. Mm-hmm. You get to the Empire State Building and Mandana is trying to open the door, pry it open, but a bunch of Ligamental show up. And then, I tell Vicky, stop them to shoot them, but they reappear. Then my bro Ligamental from the beginning pops out and goes, "This guy's cool." And they all leave.
No, this one spared me.
Yeah.
My people will tell tales of your deeds.
Literally, he let me eat a dead guy that he killed. You guys should chill. So my Mandana or my whoever didn't have to, Vicky did not have to stay and hold him off.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
But regardless, you get to the rooftop. And your former self will put the other person to sleep and then give you you think we're different, you had this power and look at all the choices you made, yes. People are going to die because of X, Y, and Z.
Basically regardless of what you did, he'll damn you for killing people, or for letting people live.
Right.
It's the space you're in. You're getting yelled at.
Yeah, it's you're just arbitrary how you're doing this stuff. And then they say you're right. I do want to become a god. I never fit in anywhere in the real world. My only option was to get powerful enough to make my own.
Yep. They put your companions to sleep. So I don't think it really matters who you keep with you here. Right. And she says, listen, join with me willingly. Like, I'm sick of fighting you. I'll have my body back. I'm not going to have to spend all this energy fighting you. I'm going to let your friends go there, and I'm going to make this work. Like, right now, I know this realm sucks, but if I spend 5 to 10 more years terrorizing people, I'll get this world to be self-sustaining, and then I won't have to do it anymore.
Right. Yeah. And we get to make our choice about whether or not we accept the deal. And there's also an option. You can say, hey, give me a moment, and you can look around, and you see that there is a missing section of railing.
Yep.
And this is how you get the best endings.
Yes. So I did two of these. I threw myself off the roof to stop my original self. The others wake up at a bar without me.
Yeah.
My body was dead. I also did, just to see what would happen, the refusal ending. You say, I'm going to fight you inside your head. And they ask you if you're sure. Uh-huh. More times than I've ever been asked if I was sure in a video game. I think it's literally 6 times of them being you really shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
Do you want the bad ending? Really? You want the bad ending? And that ending is actually really chilling and great.
Yeah.
They just takes your body back and walks by and kills all your people by dissolving them into skeletons.
Uh-huh. Just skeletonizes
and that's it.
Them.
Yeah. Skeleton rips off the flesh of everyone. Zap, zap, zap. It's great.
Yeah. You can accept the deal. And you get this new world ending. But she sticks to her word. She lets them live, but they stay asleep in this world to kind of help populate it once it's finished. Right. Mm. And then we go back to the real world, and we've got to go get this energy, and there's no way for you to not help her. You can say I'm not gonna help you kill people, but also there's this satyr who's living out in Queens. So
I gotta do it. Mm-hmm. And then the freedom ending is where you threaten to jump off.
Right.
Your old self will set you free, or you both die. She accepts, and you materialize out in the real world. Your old self is arrested and sent to prison. Because the veil's gone at this point. So always going to be a sad ending for your character personally.
Right.
You get little ending slides that kind of wrap up some of the storylines with the people you let live or those situations. But the unavowed lives.
Right. Letting Stanley live was the only one that turned out bad for me. Because Stanley starts like compelling people into this revolution that is that is put down violently.
The guy's no good.
No.
And there's a little post credits stinger. A bug demon shows up next to the unavowed standing in a line, and they all say what they could do.
Yep.
Just in turn, down to literally like, I'll ghost read you, you know? And then the bug looks at the camera and then disappoints out, 'cause he doesn't want to mess with the unavowed.
No, no. Yeah. It's real goofy.
Yeah. And that's the end. Like a pleasant enough movie. I think I probably sounded meaner or harsher on this than I actually felt playing it. I just kind of kept waiting for something to happen. And I've gotten very sensitive to those tricks. Like if something is just, you know, the same thing is going to happen no matter what you do, characters are going to react negatively, whether you, regardless of what choice you make.
Yeah.
I've kind of grown to resent that shit as kind of a fake version of something I really like.
Yeah.
In games, you know, the illusion no longer works on me. I'm no longer, I've become void touched. So if a game is just going to fake something like that, I immediately clock it and it's going to be a little pebble in my shoe, you know? And it's one of those things where I don't think that the cool parts of this game would have suffered from not having it be quite as, you know, brain dead and on rails as it is. As is, like, what's left is a perfectly good narrative adventure game. It's fun. You know, the characters are charismatic. Some of the situations are really neat. I wish they went further with it. And I wish they had a little bit more spark in the dialogue and actual prose, but it's perfectly pleasant, like a perfectly cromulent ride, you know, is how I would describe it.
My main negative feeling toward this is just like, oh man, this could have been something really cool. Right. It is not delivering on kind of some of the potential of things that are happening here. I don't know how difficult that would have been. Probably more difficult than what they chose to do. Right.
Yes.
You know?
It's also a very small studio, right? Yes. Like I don't want to beat up anybody. This. And there's nothing wrong with just making a narrative game. It's just, it's interesting that it has these hybrid qualities. You know, to it that are not very realized. And on first blush, it seems like they're going to be important. You know, you can understand how it got the RPG Steam tag, you know, or how this, like one of the taglines, when you look this up, people are like, it's the adventure game that plays like an RPG. And I'm like, oh, no, it doesn't. Like that's simply not true. Like Charlie Brown did not have hose. People in here will say anything.
It's just, you know, like the most negative feeling was just like thinking like, oh, is this it? I was like, what's there is cool, but it like made me want more. And so, but like the characters are fun. Some cool ideas, you know,
some super cool ideas.
There's cool things like knocking around in there. I'm happy I played it.
Yeah. Worst ways to spend your time.
Yeah.
One of the things that made me think of as well in terms of writing was wishing that, this had a punch up pass. I understand it's a small, crew, you know, but some of the ideas I felt like, if you, you know, writing by committee is not something you want necessarily, but having a collaboration, you might've had somebody be like, hey, this all feels pretty arbitrary that the King of the Mermaids does a surf chase at the end of this because the King of the Mermaids can grant psychic powers for his infinite war against the land. Like that's a little all over the place, man.
Like, the cool part of this is the cop geass that's there.
The King of the Mermaids shit. Where are you going with this? Like, is that your, is this your thing? You know, like, quit trying to work that into stuff, man. You know, like the King of the Mermaid will never be cool. Just things like that, you know, we're just a little bit more than it needs to be. A little bit more complicated, you know, non-additively. It ends up being a thing where like the potential was a lot higher than what it reached, but what it reached was fine. Thanks everybody for listening, and big thanks specifically to our sponsors here. Thank you to Andrew.
Ed and Andrew.
Ed and Andrew. Thank you to Ed, and Merry Christmas, Andrew.
Early or late, your choice.
We're both. Enough love in my heart. If you would like to sponsor a game either as a gift or for yourself, you can do so at patreon.com/duckfeedtv. If you are non-demographically identical to us, so you're not just a straight cis white male, you can write in to gary@duckfeed.tv with a project or product you'd like us to shout out. We'd be happy to do it. Include your pronouns, pronunciation, include a short pitch and a link, and we'd be happy to do so.
If you have thoughts about Unavowed or any of the other games we're talking about this month, so Crazy Taxi, Pony Island, or Age of Empires 2, which is our premium episode, you can write in at duckfeed.tv/contact by February the 15th. And if you have thoughts about March's games, which are Teardown Part 2, The Room, or Spider-Man Miles Morales, write in by March the 15th. It's duckfeed.tv/contact. Click the WAF button, write in. If you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses.
Yeah. Other things you can do for us that would help us out is rating and reviewing us, subscribing on your podcast directory of choice, telling your friends, and listening to your other shows.
Yeah.
There. $5 a month does give you those bonus episodes or those premium episodes, but also tons of bonus episodes and whole other bonus shows.
Yes.
Yeah. If you want to play an RPG game that has some adventure game elements in it, try Baldur's Gate 3 and listen to our new show, Real Lich Hours.
Do.
Yeah.
Choices matter. Tag.
Yeah. And I think that, and big thanks to Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen, our producer.
Yeah. Anything else? I feel like that is probably it.
I think so. That's all I got.
Yeah. So what should they do until next time, Cole?
Until next time, I mean, don't open fire at random things in New York. It seems like that'd be a really good way to get in trouble.
I would like to have a veil.
Yeah, a veil would be
so
nice.
So I could do that.
Yeah.
You know, I would open a lot of fire.
Until next time.
That I don't do now.
Develop a veil for me.
Yes. Thank you. Black Mirror.